This is Will's Band of the Week for May 9th, 2021. Welcome to another edition of Will's Band of the Week. This is Will, live from Fourth Bedroom Studios with Barrett.
Hey, I'm here.
And Chris, too.
Hey, look at us. We're all back.
Yeah. We're in the studio. We're live in studio for the first time in over a year.
That's crazy.
We're fully vaxxed.
Yeah. How about that?
Yeah.
We're trusting science, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're all,
I got the special podcasting vax, which enables you to podcast in person.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a special Fauci blend.
That's nice.
Oven roasted.
I didn't get that. I just have the regular one from Walgreens. Didn't say anything about that.
Does it say it on the card, Chris? Is there like a podcast endorsement on the back?
It's got a little set of headphones on it. It says you're cleared to podcast in person.
So, this is weird, right?
It is weird.
Like, you guys are the first two guests we've had in the house, I think, since, over a year. Except, social guests. Other, we've had, random service people come over and stuff.
Right.
But, this is just so good, right?
Yeah, I was saying right before we started to record that just walking in here into the house and then into the fourth bedroom here, it at one time feels like it's been forever. And also, like, it was like a week ago.
Yeah.
It's not an unfamiliar place.
Right. It's just like we took a couple weeks off. Yeah. And now we're back.
Last year was basically a dream. Like, we were, like, hibernating bears or something.
Yeah. But, it feels good. No masks. I did bring one just for fun. It's kind of a habit now.
Yeah.
You leave the house.
Mine's in my car.
Wallet,
I drove.
Keys, phone, mask.
I have a discriminatory rule for the house. Fully vaxxed, you don't need a mask. Not vaxxed, you gotta have a mask.
Yeah. Are you guys...
Actually, I'm not inviting anybody unvaxxed over here. We're all vaxxed. The entire household.
Yeah. Oh,
the entire household. Wow.
Yep. Those two adult children of mine got their second vax just earlier this week. So I guess they're not really official until 2 weeks after that, but
they're pretty good
by the time
shape.
You get to the second one, you're supposed to be like 80% after like a week after the first one, I think. So,
Anyway.
So I've been wondering about that. They say we're 95% protected.
Yeah.
That's different than saying we have a 1 in 20 chance of getting the virus.
Yeah, it means we have 1/20th of the chance of it.
Before, which was low in the first place. So.
Right. I think that's what it means.
Yeah, I'll go with that.
Yeah.
I think we should address any listeners out there that may be hesitant about getting the vaccine. What do you think?
Tell them to get it? Yeah.
You should get it.
Absolutely get it.
Side effects were completely overblown. I don't know anybody that got sick at all. I'm actually looking over at Chris because I know he had it pretty bad.
Yeah.
After we were so celebratory and kind of feeling pretty confident when we were talking to Sarah on that last podcast.
Right. Go back and listen to that podcast. Yeah. I was like, oh, I feel great. Nothing's happening. And like literally as soon as I got off the podcast, I started getting the shakes and the chills. This kind of sounds like I'm listening off bands. I got the shakes and then I got the chills. And then I got the sweats. And then I got the headaches.
But it was all worth it.
They're all playing Lollapalooza this year.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Well, we're kind of late doing this, but we can't have this discussion without the jingle.
It's time for the very serious Corona Report. My ain't Corona.
Yeah, the inimitable Nicholas.
Yep.
Thanks again for that. It's been like just over a year now, I guess.
Yeah, so I guess we played it 52 times.
Something like that. Not quite that many, but pretty close. Let's see. I think maybe on my music program here it says how many times it's been played. It just says 20. But I think it probably means maybe if I stopped it before the very end, then it doesn't count as a play. Yeah, it's got to be more than 20. Well, anyway, it'll be fun to play that like 10 years from now when this is such a distant memory, we hope.
Yeah. I think things will feel normal more quickly than we're guessing they will. Once we can stop wearing masks and stuff. That could be good ways off yet, but...
Yeah.
I don't know.
Any plans to expand the coffee shop operation, Barrett?
We are planning to do it. We're just, I don't know. We're going to be cautious about it, you know. So Madison and maybe Dane County, countywide, is going to 75% capacity, and we're at zero right now. So we'll probably go to 50 and also be, you know, maybe a week later than everybody else. You don't want to look too anxious, and so it's just what feels right.
And you guys are always a little extra careful. Then you've run a very smooth operation, I think.
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, it's been kind of nice not having anybody in there, to be honest. It's not without its advantages. I like, you know, it's better when people are there, but, you know, probably like 30% of our baristas have never, you know, brought a drink to a customer in the place. They're always outside, so.
It's typically not a great business plan. Like, I love it when nobody's in here.
Yeah, no. You know, it's like anything else.
You hear a lot of ex-business owners say that.
Right. Well, it'd be like at a football stadium, you know, maybe the custodial staff is like, I don't miss people being here. It's kind of like it like
right.
this.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the more people in there, the more money usually is going into the register. So you can't overlook that.
Well, Chris's business hasn't changed very much. I mean, Ron Swanson, he doesn't even have to wear a mask because he's made out of cardboard.
True.
You know.
Yeah.
So it looks right at home.
Yeah. I've just been trapped in my house, though. It's nice to finally get out. This is the first... I mean, Barrett and I did something social last week, but other than that, this is about it.
Yeah.
This is the highlight of my year, sitting right here talking to you guys.
Doesn't it seem... we've been talking lately about all the shows that they're scheduling for the fall. Doesn't it seem like they're going kind of crazy? Like, it's almost like they're overconfident? I mean, I sure hope that it's going to be fine by then, but the number of shows getting booked is kind of crazy.
Yeah, we were discussing how many shows we've already got tickets to. I just bought like 3 tickets to 3 separate shows in September, and I'm not confident at all that any of those shows are going to happen. Yeah. But it's like I might as well be buying like Bitcoin or something, and expecting it to pay off. But so I don't know. We'll see.
I think they'll happen, but like I said, it does seem like it's gotten kind of crazy with the number of bookings.
He's on a canine podcaster in here. Now he's out. There we go.
A dogcaster.
Yep. The curious dog, he came in. He's like, who are these people? I've never seen these people before.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can just keep your foot wedged in the door there.
I mean, I don't want to be rude to the dog. He's just staring at me now, like through the crack in the door. He's challenging my manhood. Sorry, dog.
Well, we did extensive pre-production to come up with some music to talk about. Should we do any special features? I don't know, any Rockin' Apple or anything like that?
Last night I watched I guess you would call it a rockumentary.
Oh, what was that?
On HBO Max, and it was about Tina Turner.
Oh, I've heard about that.
And it was excellent. Yeah. It was outstanding. Like, I was not that well-versed. I was, you know, I was a youngster when she had her kind of resurgence in the 80s, and I was... very, very impressed by her, obviously her personally, but her music output and her performance. They dug a lot back into the 60s.
Did they show that, like, Sullivan thing where they do Proud Mary?
Yeah.
That is, that they're on fire.
It's incredible. The energy that they had and just kind of how they were trailblazers. And then after she left Ike for obvious reasons, and it's difficult to hear a lot of the stuff that they discuss, she wanted to be... I mean, she ended up kind of being like an 80s star, pop star, but she really wanted to be a rock and roller. Like, in the late 70s, after she left Ike, she was tight with the Rolling Stones, and her goal was to be like the Rolling Stones, like an African-American female Rolling Stones. Hmm. And for whatever reason, you know, they did a demo, and it didn't work out, and so she moved to England, where they got her a little bit more. She was a little more popular there. And ended up coming out with her album in 1984, Private Dancer, which completely relaunched her entire career at age 42 or 44 or whatever it was, and she became a huge pop star. But I'm just kind of wondering, like, what if she had broken through and been like a rock star in the late 70s? I mean, that's the era where like Blondie and the Pretenders and female rock lead singers were just starting to come into her own, and she could have been one of those trailblazers.
Right. But for the one difference, maybe, that 45 years ago made a bigger difference than it would today, and that's the color of her skin.
Right.
You know?
She might not have got... It would have confused people.
Like, yeah.
She wouldn't have gotten played on R&B stations, and
yeah, they'd be
probably
like,
not on rock stations.
That's not... You're not supposed to make music like that.
But
that's
a lot of
they would say.
Yeah, but a lot of the music that she made with Ike kind of straddled the two. I mean, it wasn't straight R&B, and it wasn't right. straight rock. It wasn't Motown. It was kind of in the middle of all that stuff, and it still got play. So I still love the album River Deep, Mountain High, which was the Phil Spector album from 1966, mm-hmm. where it has like all the Phil Spector bells and whistles. I mean, you can, with your eyes closed, you can tell immediately that it's a Phil Spector album.
He put so much money and effort into that. That was really one of the things that kind of sent him over the edge.
Yeah.
He was so disappointed because, I mean, well, I bet you don't know that song unless you, I mean,
not
that was supposed to be
head.
A huge hit.
Right.
Huh. And it bombed.
He kicked Ike out of the studio. Like, Ike had nothing to do with making that that record. He paid Ike money to go away and not be near the studio. And I think you can probably hear it in Tina's lyrics, in her delivery. She was like freed up at that point. So let's play a little bit of that song. Can you do that? It's the first song on the album. It's called River Deep, Mountain High, and you'll know immediately what I'm talking about with the wall of sound and the instrumentation and all the tricks. And this was really their first big album before kind of the late 60s and the early 70s, where they started to really catch up. So I see you found it, so let's listen.
When I was a little girl, I had a rag doll, only doll I've ever owned. Now I love you just the way I love that rag doll.
I definitely recognized it when it got to the chorus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like a common thing on those rockumentaries is they'll be talking to one of the producers or engineers or something or whatever. And they're like, as soon as we got done with it, we all sat there for the playback and we were like, holy shit, this is a guaranteed hit.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they must have felt that about this. Like, holy shit.
They did. And it completely flopped in the U.S.
Yeah.
They didn't get him anywhere. They loved it in England, which is why she was able to go there later, because she was a big star there. But it took a couple more albums for them to actually catch on. And then once she left Ike, for good reason, she was back to square zero. I mean, she was playing like dinner clubs and stuff until she had her big resurgence. So she's incredible. I would say 10 out of 10. Watch the documentary. It's great.
Yeah, will do. So let's circle back to that, somebody being paid not to come to a studio. Is that something that we can explore here?
Like, I think it's probably worth thinking about, yeah.
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 Just maybe we can start like a, you know, Kickstarter thing.
Yeah.
Keep Barrett out of the studio. See how much money we can raise.
Well, today Twitter announced that they were going to start doing tip jars where you can, like, if you like somebody's tweet, you can tip them some money. And immediately people started saying, oh, I would give money for people not to tweet. Like, that would be the would be the use of it. Like, just stop tweeting forever and I'll give you $10 for certain people. Yeah. So
you could set that up, I think.
Yeah.
Just monitor the account, you know. I'll pay you a dollar to not tweet for the next 24 hours or something like that. You could just buy whatever amount of time you want. Yeah.
Yeah. What would it cost for us to stop doing this podcast?
Oh, my God. Thousands and thousands of dollars.
Million. $1 million yeah. dollars. I won't do the podcast anymore.
Yeah. I mean, just to prove our dedication, since we're a podcast that makes $0 and charges $0, I mean, you'd have to pay us a lot to stop doing this.
Absolutely. We're going to get bought by like some Chinese conglomerate.
Yeah.
And be replaced.
For sure.
Well, we could be bought by a Chinese conglomerate for, you know, like a few million dollars. And then the trick would be, how long can we go without anybody realizing it? But, you know, we would just kind of still try to just act totally cool, even though we've been bought out by these Chinese billionaires.
We just slip in an occasional positive reference for Chairman Xi every now and then.
Yeah, a few little subtle things. Feature a few more Chinese bands.
Yeah.
Well, all right. I think this we've reached our sufficient point of, I guess it's not no music. We had the nice Tina Turner feature. So, but well, we've got three bands to discuss, and they're going to be good, according to me. Chris nominated somebody about a month ago. We're finally getting around to it. So, Chris, why don't we do that one first?
Okay. We need to get in and out of this band quickly.
Okay.
There are some hand grenades in discussing this band for an old man like me. This album, on paper, as they say in the sports world, I should not like at all. I should like absolutely nothing about this band. It's very mathy. Everybody knows my thoughts about... Who's our favorite math rock band from England? What are they?
I mean, Black Midi.
Black Midi.
Yeah, that a little
there's
mathy.
So much more than just math rock.
I've seen them twice, and they're a band I don't even like.
Hey, good news.
Yeah.
They're not coming to Madison. They're coming to Milwaukee. This is per Craig.
So Chris won't have to go.
You don't even
go.
Need to come up with some creative excuse.
It's... You know, it's off kilter. It's weird. It's very relaxed, I think. So not usually what I would think of. The lyrics, the song topics are something that you know. Let me see here. So the lyrics here in the Pitchfork review of this band. For a band that quietly wants to educate listeners about decolonization and libertarian socialism, whatever that is, Floaty hit their stride when using personal struggles to illuminate universalities in their songs. Like, just kill me. It's like I've just waded into the gender studies department at the UW-Madison, and I'm getting a lecture from a band on... libertarian socialism, whatever, that doesn't even mean anything. They're like diametrically opposed, but so there's nothing about this band that I should like, but I love this album. I love it. I've probably listened to it like 200 times in the past couple of weeks. I'm working and I put it on and I love the drums, I love the singing, I love the off kilter, like it's just so creative in the way that it kind of jumps around but then leaves you in the right place. I absolutely love this band and this album. And so the band is Floaty. The album is called Voyage Out, and so I'm going to pick a song, and I'm going to pick song number 2, which is called Water Recipe. ¶¶
Floaty from Chicago, right?
Yeah, that's going to turn it into a theme, I believe, on this this podcast.
Might happen.
Yeah, I really like that a lot. And, you know, maybe this is why Chris doesn't always like music like that. Usually the singer doesn't sound that way. Like, they sound like Slint to me, but Slint is aggressive with, like, talky, yelly lyrics. And this doesn't sound anything like that.
Yeah.
And more bursts of, like, anger with the instruments and stuff.
Yeah, I think the name of the band is perfect. It's just like a soft pillow. Floaty.
Yeah, it's like a soft math rock. Like, you don't really hear that combination that much, do you?
Yeah, there aren't any interludes where they just burst into, like, just wilding out nonsense. It's just all totally under control. And, like I said, the drumming is just, it's off kilter. But, I mean, to me, drumming is magic to begin with. I can't even imagine how people do it. But to be able to trip around and change your timing patterns and end up in exactly where you're supposed to be, I think is just genius.
That would be hard to do. You play drums, Will.
Yeah.
I'm with Chris. It seems like sorcery, magic. I've got good rhythm and stuff, but I just don't get it.
Well, what I always say is I can play AC/DC drums, you know, just the yeah. most methodical, easy 4/4 time.
Like Def Leppard one arm drums.
I need both arms for sure. And I would not be able to play floaty drums, that's for sure. But
anybody even that could, if you did that live, you'd have to be like, we're going to build an isolation chamber around my drum kit so I can't hear anybody. You guys can hear me. I won't know what's going on. I'll just try to do my thing.
Right. This has to be what was going on in like jazz clubs in the 50s and 60s, though, where you know somebody will walk in and then they'll just start playing drums and then someone else starts riffing and you all just kind of have to come together. And it feels like these people should like know each other for 100 years to be able to sync up in that way. And yet this is their first album, I believe. Yeah. And they feel that it sounds like they've been together for a century to be able to pull off the timing that they do. And I think it's just amazing.
What I like about the one you played there is like the little guitar figure at the end. It feels like it's all kind of like gone wobbly and then that pulls it all back together and then they do it again. But like with a jazz thing, like it's a lot of times it sounds like the drummer doesn't care at all what anybody else is doing. And everybody's just kind of doing their stuff. And if it doesn't come together at all, that's okay, too. Like the old thing, like, if you're playing jazz and you make a mistake, just make sure it's loud. So everybody can hear it.
You don't stop and, like,
no.
Point at yourself and be like, oh, my bad.
No, you're supposed to stare at your bandmate, like, so it looks like they made the mistake. So, I've joked about that a lot in my aging rocker bands. Barrett, so want to make a pick?
Sure. I'm going to make one observation about the way that, you know, I've listened to it like 6 times. You've listened to it a lot. There is a sameness that creeps in, isn't there? You know the song so much better than I do, but
I suppose, yeah. I mean, they're all very much in the same style.
Like the way that I saw this, the first and the last song start right away with the herky-jerky, you know, math-rocky rhythms and stuff. And the ones in the middle all start off with a little kind of a drone sound, and then they do that. So I'll play one from the middle, see if we can find any controversial lyrics on the one, Catch a Good Worm. Seems pretty innocuous, but we'll see.
That was my next pick. If I got a next pick, this would have been it. You're right.
Thank you.
floaty.
Yep.
So during that, I tried to make an attempt to air drum.
I saw that.
And I couldn't even...
I was doing the same thing, because I was trying to... You tried to hit the next downbeat, but then you're off by like one. Because I must do like seven instead of eight beats or something.
Right.
Yeah, just...
This is like Radiohead Amnesiac type of stuff, except they did it with computers mostly. And I wish I knew the drummer's name to give him proper credit, but yeah.
I think it's Zach Starkey, isn't it? Ringo Starr's son.
You think so? Living in Chicago?
Pretty sure. Check up on that. Maybe cut that out if it's not true.
Yeah, we never allow mistakes to stay in, so it's something I can do with the editing process.
And the lead singer, delivery, lackadaisical, very comfortable, very mellifluous. The lead singer is Sam Byrne, pronouns they, them. So that's all I can really say about that without getting myself canceled, because I'm going to trip up and say something wrong. So, yeah, love Sam Byrne. You go, them.
You know, you were talking about the lyrics. I literally have not understood a single word of it, you know, and that doesn't bother me really. But I mean, for me, it would take like real effort to try to even understand what they were saying. And then the next step, of course, trying to figure out what it even means.
Right.
I wonder if part of the problem might be like just the way that Pitchfork writer wrote about it, because I think sometimes, you know, music critics or writers tend to embellish things and interpret it in a way the band might not have even meant. I don't know.
That could be. This album is not a manifesto that's going to move people to action.
I don't think so.
Because it just doesn't... Everybody's just going to be like awkwardly dancing around and trying to air drum.
Right.
Without understanding any of the words. I don't know any of the words either.
People are not listening to this album because they want to learn more about decolonialization.
I don't think so.
Yeah. So... it's a good album.
All right. We got to play one more.
All right.
I'm going to go with the title track, Voyage Out.
Up the just Floaty of a tour coming up, or
yeah, we should go see Floaty in Madison if they're coming. But that song that had like exactly what I was talking about. Like, so it's got the off kilter kind of rhythm, and then when it kicks into a standard rhythm, like right in the middle there, it sounds all that much better when you compare it to what came before and what came after. So they kick into like a standard thing with a standard riff, and it's like, oh my gosh, now they're really grooving. And then they kind of drop out of it, and it's just the contrast. It's like the Pixies loud, quiet, loud type of thing, except this is just with timing.
Yeah, it's Floaty. The album is Voyage Out, and check them out.
Absolutely.
From Chicago, if they start playing some shows.
If they're a math band.
You got to come to Madison, right?
If they're a math band and I like them, then they got to be good, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It would be like Will suggesting hip hop.
Right.
Yeah.
Or a country band. Those are both outside of his wheelhouse.
Yeah.
Am I wrong on that?
Pretty much. Yeah.
What's your favorite rap album of all time? DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince?
Oh, my God. You know, it's going to make me seem one-dimensional.
Young MC? LL Cool J? There's a cat in here
now
talking
to us. Now the
cat
just burst into the studio. She's very demanding. Yeah, okay, sorry, you're not getting anything.
Cat wants to talk about hip-hop. MC Scat Cat. Okay, that's floaty.
Yep. Well, all right, should we keep on rocking?
Yeah, absolutely. Never stop rocking.
So this is, you know, sometimes we talk about, and we probably should have mentioned with floaty, that it's 9 songs and 27 minutes. And that's pretty great, right?
Yeah.
I think we're fans of kind of the succinct album. Don't let it go for too long. So
I see where this is going.
So, yeah. So this is unbelievable, right? We're going to talk about an album that is 10 songs, and the total time is 13 minutes, 48 seconds.
Yeah.
So like they're not wasting any time at all. But it kind of still feels like an album, doesn't it? Because from track to track, it's not like this would be just one track of Godspeed You Black Emperor, right?
Absolutely. I was joking with Barrett. We are going to spend more time talking about this band than the entire album length. So start the clock.
Okay, so the band is called Spread Joy, another Chicago band. So we're really doing the Midwest right this week, aren't we?
Yes. A lot of good Chicago bands these days. Beach Bunny. Who else? That's the only one I can think of. The two bands.
They could play this album 3 times in a row. It'd be like a 40-minute set.
Right.
They'd be perfect for South by Southwest because they could play the whole album. And, you know, with the little banter in between, it'd be like a 20-minute set.
Or opening up for floaty.
Sure. Know? Yeah.
Each play all the songs they know. And then the opener plays twice as long as or half as long.
I remember in 2008, Morgan and I actually went to the High Noon Saloon to go see this new band called Vampire Weekend. And they played their album, and that's it. Those are the only songs they knew.
They just played
could
the
play.
Album.
And it was about 40 minutes. They were in, they were out. No covers, no nothing. And
They
were brand spanking new.
Did Morgan like it?
I think I probably enjoyed it more.
Yeah.
I actually remember that. I mean, I didn't go to the show, but I remember when they first sort of broke out. And
they came here really early on in their meteoric rise. I just remember like right on the cusp of, you know, like widespread popularity. Not popularity, but, you know, among the hipsterati.
Yeah. I found a lot of bad reviews of that album in my...
Really?
In my, you know, I do my...
Zero-star reviews?
Zero-star reviews Twitter feed, which everybody should subscribe to this very second.
Right.
And I was thinking, like, what are some more recent bands that got bad reviews that I could look up? And there are a bunch of Vampire Weekend. But I haven't posted it yet because, I mean, kind of the funny part of the feed is that these are things that, like, everybody loves and time has told... that are absolute classics, and so the bad reviews look foolish now, but I'm not sure that a lot of people would agree that Vampire Weekend is like a classic or flawless. Like they look at the review and go, yeah, I see it.
Yeah. Hmm. I don't know. Do you ever pull out audio segments from podcasts? Because you can be like, listen to this friggin' moron.
From talk our
about,
podcast?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Talk about me. This guy didn't even like...
God.
You're too nice. You don't
fire.
Yeah, you don't pan anything.
It was so wrong.
Arcade Fire, I looked up Funeral, and there's just no bad reviews. It's impossible.
That one wasn't bad. Starting with Neon Bible, though, they're all bad.
Oh my gosh, I'm gonna have to link to this. there are some albums that are just critic proof. I couldn't find for a while any LCD Sound System albums that got bad reviews. Everybody loved LCD Sound System until I finally found one where they played this show in like near LA and nobody came. And so the reviewer was like, ah, this hipster junk, nobody listens to it, and electronic music is going back into the underground in New York where it belongs, and blah, blah, blah. And then, of course, LCD and Sound System goes on to be, like, huge band selling out stadiums and stuff. So,
yeah. Well, this is probably a bias because we always talk about how, on our podcast, we only talk about things we like, so there aren't very many bad reviews on our podcast, right? But don't you think that there just aren't that many bad reviews anymore?
Well, right. There aren't that many, period. If you think about, like, reviews per album released, whatever it used to be. A lot of albums were released, but there were a lot of reviews in all the newspapers.
Every newspaper had, like,
their
Madison own.
Madison would have two.
Right, their own. Three. You know, Nashville would have their own. Miami would have their own. Everybody had their
Milwaukee
own.
Would have two.
Everybody had their own reviewers, and now there's like four or five websites that have reviews.
But that's because there was so much less music being put out back then. There was probably a tenth or a hundredth of the amount of music, right?
Well,
everything, it was just whatever the
both
big
of those
labels,
things are true.
Whatever
there
the big
less
labels
being put out
gave
and
you.
More being written about, you know. It's not that like you can pick a random album and there aren't reviews of it. It's just that there aren't people that write reviews for newspapers anymore.
Well, for newspapers, that's definitely true. But
right.
Yeah, newspapers just take, if they have reviews of anything, they just take like a national feed from somebody, which they did back then, too. There are a lot of like national feed stories. But it's so cute that like, you know, some guy in Butte, Montana will have, you know, strong feelings about, you know, the latest David Bowie album.
It's
amazing.
Well, so now, if an album comes out, some major release, and if you don't like it, you just don't listen to it because there's 100 other things to listen to. And I think back then, everything was controlled by these big major labels. It's almost like you were getting force-fed whatever they deemed worthy to come out on an album, right? And then so therefore, everything that came out was a subject of discussion. And if you didn't like it, you know, you could write a review that says, I don't like this, right? Because you didn't have as many alternatives. That's kind of my thought.
There are a lot of albums, though, that I never thought would have lots of reviews that do have lots of reviews, like came out on really small labels or whatever. Like the first Shins album, I thought, like, who's going to review this? But there are papers all over the country reviewed the Shins album, even though nobody knew who the hell the Shins were at the time.
That's interesting.
That one's 20 years old this year.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's another reminder that we're aging rockers.
Yeah. So what were we talking about?
Oh, okay, yeah. Spread Joy. Let's pick a track.
We just, in the time that we just diverted to reviews, we could have played the entire album.
Yeah, that's right.
No, this is only, it's only 6.5 minutes, not 13 and a half minutes. Barely, not even half.
Okay, I'm going to, I'm going to go ahead and pick a track, and I'm going to pick the longest song on the album. It's 2 minutes and 7 seconds, number 4, Unoriginal.
Stole my pick.
Oh,
spread joy.
That sounds exactly like another band.
Oh!
Can you tell me who it is?
Barrett is back.
Except for the vocals. You have to discount that.
Whatever you say, it will probably make sense after
I'll
you say
it. I'll give you the initials. PQ. No. PQC.
Parquet Courts?
I give you initials for all of the syllables. That sounds just like Parquet Courts, the bass and stuff.
Yeah, I guess it does. Yeah, yeah, that punchy thing.
There's a couple of, yeah, that one. One called Mystery Curtain and Sepia also sound a lot like that band. But, yeah, I really like it. I like Parquet Courts, and I like that.
I came here loaded up with two suggestions of songs to play. One was Unoriginal, and one was Mystery Curtain. So I'm going to get Mystery Curtain in here.
You got to get it in there right now.
Before I have no picks left.
Okay, here it is. Number 6, Mystery Curtain. That's 1:09. They, you know, they made their point, and then they just stop.
We have to document this historic moment.
Yeah, Bear was just taking a photo of Chris. It's going to go viral.
Yeah. The first one, he had the drink kind of behind the microphone.
Yeah.
Mm.
And so I had him separate.
That's a no-go.
You had to frame it
plus
properly.
Plus, the lighting was all bad. Like, he had to set up the lighting rig.
Mm-hmm. Right. We had to get makeup in here because he had like a little hot spot on his on his cheek.
Right, my forehead was a little shiny. I had to puff that out a little bit.
I was wondering why you brought in that big reflector umbrella thing.
Yeah, you're next.
Yeah,
you're next.
I'll look good no matter what. I don't even need special effects.
So Barrett suggested this album a while ago, and I listened to it once, and I thought. I'm like, I'm going to listen to this a couple times and try and guess where this band was from. And I immediately thought it was like one of these new Asian bands that is doing rock music, Say Sumi, etc. Because there is a little affectation to the singer's voice. So I was thinking It might be like a Korean band or something. So I was pretty shocked to find out they were from Chicago.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a fun game to play.
That is fun.
It's like when you did, what was the band from Turin, Italy last week?
Right.
That sounds exactly like...
Early R.E.M.
R.E.M.
Yeah, Smile, yeah. They're friends of the podcast now. They listened to it and everything. It was great.
Oh, yeah? Cool.
Oh, yeah. Well, maybe they didn't listen. Maybe they just knew that we talked about it and liked it. Well, they didn't really have to listen.
Now that we have fans there, we need to get, like, a translator.
Yes.
3 translators. So we can just talk and then the translators will be... You know, doing the recording.
I'd love to be big in Italy.
Yeah.
If we could be...
That'd be fun.
Yeah, if we can get a trip paid to go over to Italy and podcast over there.
You know, how come there seems like there are a lot of bands where they just catch on in just one little area, one little region, right? Nobody even knows about them in their own country, and then they've like, well, they were really popular in the Netherlands or something.
Right.
Why can't there be just one country that likes us? Wouldn't that be nice? Then we would go there.
Yeah, well... I mean, I don't know. I think we have multiple listeners in several different countries.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. More than one.
They're all in Nick's backyard barbecuing at once.
Right. Like, we are likely to have as many listeners in, like, Stuttgart as we have in Madison.
Yeah.
Which would be, like...
Absolutely true.
That's probably true.
One. Yeah.
Yep. If we could just have one per city worldwide, that'd be pretty good.
Wow, yeah.
Well... Barrett, I think I stole Chris's pick and then Chris stole yours.
Okay.
So now this is it's track stealing. So now there's you get the last word.
Yeah. Well, you know, we were talking about different countries and languages. I'm going to pick one that she sings in German. Because I was trying to think of who the singer reminds me of. And briefly, Nina Hagen popped into head. And I'm like, not really at all. But then I'm like, well, I'll just play the one where she sings in German. So, kannst du.
Joy.
Yeah.
This is a really fun album.
It spread joy to all three podcasters for starters.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. Lived up to its name. Yeah.
Yeah.
Truth in advertising.
You can listen to the whole thing in less than 14 minutes. It's totally bang for your buck. All right. Have we done justice to Spread Joy?
I think so.
And this is another one where we can just tell people, just go listen to it. It's not a big time commitment. And you know, it's got a sound to it, right? They're going to know if they like that sound. I love it. I think it's
me too.
Just fun in so many ways, like the punchiness of the whole thing. And the bass is great, of course. And I really like the way she sings. It's fun. Right.
If you're in the middle of a song and you're like saying to yourself, I don't really like this song, don't worry. There's a new one coming soon.
Yeah, in like a minute. Yeah.
30 seconds, you'll be listening to a completely different song.
Yeah.
All right, 2 for 2 from Chicago. Unfortunately, we have to leave Chicago now because we didn't have a third Chicago artist.
Oh, no.
But we do have...
Can we drive there or do we have to fly or tell us where we're going?
Well, you know, it'd be a long drive, but it'd be a fun drive out to the Bay Area of California.
Ah.
San Francisco, specifically.
Yeah.
We're talking about friend of the podcast.
Are we the Beverly Hillbillies?
Nope.
Heading out west? Black Gold, Texas Tea.
We're talking about friend of the podcast, Glenn Donaldson. And, you know, Glenn Donaldson, what a prolific indie rocker he is. I call him a friend of the podcast because we had him on the podcast when we talked about his project Horrid Red with a German singer. That was really cool. And then he's half of Vacant Gardens, who we've talked to on the podcast, Jem. And he also did a collaboration with... Jeremy from Woods, called Painted Shrines. He's in an old band that is highly regarded called Sky Green Leopards. But Glenn Donaldson's own solo project is called The Reds, Pinks, and Purples. I think we've maybe talked about one of his earlier releases.
We did, yeah. I can't tell you when, but...
Yeah, a couple of years ago, maybe. Or maybe less than 2 years ago. So he's got a new one out now, and I think it's really good. I think it's... the best I've heard from his stuff. So I love it. So I'm just out there. I'm saying I love it. We could probably just stop the podcast now. Everybody can just go listen to it.
All right. Good night, everybody.
But I've had this on the playlist for a while now, and I gave it a little more in depth listening this week, and it just gets better every time I listen. So it's called Uncommon Weather. I have no idea what you guys think about this. You could like throw water on the... Let's see, what's the cliche? What would be throwing water on? A fire, I guess?
Well, you throw water on fires. You throw water
unless
on...
Unless it's a grease fire, in which case, what do you put? You throw salt on it?
And hurt you there.
Yeah.
You can throw flour on it.
Flour.
Yeah.
Or it could be salt on the wound.
You make a nice little bread out of it, too, when your bread goes out.
I'm confused. Or are we doing like...
I'm concerned about...
Cliche association here?
Yeah. I'm a little worried about what you guys might say, but
throw water on ideas is what you... Like, that's what you do.
I'm going to tell you that I like it, And it is 13 songs, 35 minutes. And I had a hard time picking a track. I've got a whole bunch of them that I really like. So
so it's 20 minutes longer than Spread Joy.
Right. It's like a lot longer than Spread Joy.
Yeah. How about a little editing? Right? Self-indulgent.
God, these three-minute songs. Yeah. Get to it. Get to the point.
Yeah, let's get... All right.
It's really five songs in 3 minutes, but the rest is all bonus tracks.
Exactly. There you go. Free of charge. All right. It's too hard to pick a track, but I think I'll go with number three, The Biggest Fan. Reds, pinks, and purples.
Yeah, that's really, really nice.
Yes, very pleasant.
It's got such an 80s vibe. But usually when people say, sounds like 80s music, they mean something different than this.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
To me, remember the band House of Love?
Yep.
It sounds like they'd be on Creation Records with House of Love, to me.
Yeah, Creation Records.
That's a compliment, in case you were wondering. Oh, I felt about it. I do like it a lot.
It probably has a sound of maybe some British bands from that era, but it's also not surprising. It doesn't sound out of place if you know he's from California, right? There's a little California pop element, a little kind of psychedelic pop, and he's got the trademark kind of swirling guitars and...
So like kind of also a Paisley Underground type deal? Yeah.
Yep.
Swirling. I like guitars that swirl.
Oh, yeah. It's a good thing for them to do. Yeah. Well, either of you in a position to pick a track?
I am. I listened to this, and I enjoyed it. And the song I enjoyed the most is, I don't know what number it is, but it's called Pictures of the World.
So let's go ahead. I'm so glad you picked that one. It was on my short list.
Haha. See? I have ears of gold.
Of a girl, tears and a broken heart, the comment section tore apart. She couldn't say what she needed to say. It was, take the pain or throw it away. Pictures of the world, woven bright lights in his eyes. He said too much of what he wanted to say. He took too much, never gave it away. Pictures of the world, pictures of the world, pictures of the world, pictures of the
That's the Reds, Pinks, and Purples from the album Uncommon Weather.
Yeah, really good. The beginning reminded me of something, and I was like, what is that? It sounds like a slowed down version of Just Like Honey by the Jesus and Mary Chain.
All right.
This is the benefit of being old, because we have reference points.
Right.
Like, this makes me feel like 13 years old again.
The young listeners are like, those guys must be really old. That's what they're thinking.
Right.
A lot of the retro music that's out there is mainly for people who weren't around for this. And so it's like brand new to them. And then you have like old farts like us where it's like, oh, yeah, I remember that.
That'd be like if they had podcasting when we were 20, some old guy like, you know what that sounds like? That sounds like Jimmy Durante. Who the F is this guy?
When you were 20, you would never listen to a podcast with like old guys, would you?
Probably not. I don't know.
It only just occurred to me as I said the words that if you use the term old fart, you are by definition old fart.
Yeah, nobody uses that term anymore.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I apologize to our younger listeners.
Well, I think this album is just full of really good songs, and I keep thinking if these in a like a live band context would be great.
Yeah, for sure.
So, well, you've got the direct line now. Give him a call.
Yeah.
Get him to Madison.
He should come, definitely.
Get him to Summerfest. Yes. By the way, should we discuss that? Yeah,
they're doing it like on three consecutive weekends? Like Friday, Saturday, Sunday?
Yeah, it's kind of weird. It's all in September now. Yeah.
The lineup wasn't that impressive, I didn't think. At least for indie rockers.
For a lot of people, it's very impressive. Yeah. For us, the cool people.
Yeah.
I mean, the point is to have a broad appeal.
Yeah, of course.
So bands like Pixies are playing, Liz Phair, Living Color, who I love, Night Ranger is playing.
Wilco's playing.
Wilco's playing, yeah.
I mean,
Dave Matthews Band. I mean, a lot of people love Dave Matthews Band.
It's not all bad, I guess. I mean, I didn't even realize a couple of those. I didn't notice Liz Phair. So
a lot of 90s bands.
I can look at a festival now, like Coachella. I have zero interest.
Yeah.
It's like headlining Coachella. Like, whoever the hell, you know?
Well, it's not like we're going to care that often about the headliners.
Katy Perry or something. Like, Jesus Christ, really? But
I'm always looking at the down ballot, like the lower half of the lineup. Right. And it seems like it used to be that some really cool indie rockers were on those bills, and now it seems like it's all who knows what those bands are. I don't know who they are.
Yeah, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, typically the younger you are, the smaller print you can read. So I think like the cool hipster bands, they do that so the young people can see them. And so, but we're the flip side. We're old hipsters, and so now we can't see the fine print. You got to make the print bigger for us. Right.
And now
unless you get so old.
Invert the print, yes.
If you get so old like me, then you have an interocular lens that is corrected for close-up vision. High tech.
That's gross.
Interocular lens is a good name for a band.
That would be good, yeah.
The outer ocular lenses.
Maybe you guys will have that someday.
Do we have outer ocular? Is that what glasses are? Outer ocular lenses?
Oh, I guess they kind of are, yeah. Yeah.
Extra ocular.
No, this is what happens. They literally melt the lens of your eye, and they put a piece of plastic in there instead.
Oh, I did not need to hear that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but then they can put, it's like a permanent contact lens. So they can put it up. Yeah, it's great.
Well, why don't you just get LASIK?
Because I had early onset cataracts, and you can't correct cataracts with LASIK because it's your lens is like basically your lens instead of clear, it's like starting to turn yellow, and then it's blurry no matter what.
This podcast just became a HIPAA violation.
Yeah,
like you're talking all about your health.
I know. History. Yeah, because pretty soon the people will just demand my medical records. I'll have to give them.
Yeah, first we're like citing 35-year-old. Bands like Jesus and Mary Chain. Now we're talking about our ailments.
Right. Yeah. No, I'm saying this is a good ailment to have, though, because
bursitis in my knee.
The fix is so good. Really? Like, how many ailments can you say that about? The fix is so good that it's like, I'm glad that I had it.
Yeah.
You know?
I think, you know, like my dad must have had that done. But for simplicity's sake,
because suddenly he just said,
I had LASIK for my cataracts. So now I know that's not really, that's just like a shorthand and easy way for him to tell people about it without,
See, LASIK actually
talking about the melting your changes, eye part.
Right?
Yeah, that's
LASIK
gross.
Changes
this is like Star Trek.
LASIK changes the shape of the lens to make it better focused, but it's still your natural lens. But if you have cataracts, they just melt out that lens. It's gone. You got no lens. So
how did they
put in a little plastic one?
Do we have a medical jingle?
medical
questions.
Medical report of the week. This is going to be more and more common the older we get.
Right.
Yeah.
Just do death of the week and talk about your eyes.
Because like, seriously, somebody did the first LASIK surgery, or the first one that you're talking about. You know, at first they're like, "Yeah, we can like reshape the lens or whatever." Somebody's like, "I got another idea. Let's fucking poop. Let's just melt the lens and put a different." Put a plastic in there. Is the eye going to
like? Come on,
that's probably going to be just fine.
Did they do the first LASIK on like a mouse, and like suddenly the mouse was like, "Oh my, holy shit, I can see now!"
Yeah, totally.
It could grab cheese like so fast.
Yeah. It had been grabbing next to the cheese, like an inch off to the left. Then they gave him LASIK, and suddenly he's like, "Oh my god, I can get the cheese!"
Right.
Right.
Yeah. How would they test that? How would they test the mouses? There'd be like one mouse and give them the surgery. Then you have like two mouses of the opposite sex. One is ugly and the other is super hot.
No, this is how they test alcohol in mice. Like you feed alcohol to a mouse and he's like, hey girl, what's up?
Yeah.
All right. This is getting out of hand. Barrett, I'm sure Barrett, he's been thinking, I got to make a pick from this Red, Pinks, and Purples album.
Yeah, I'm going to pick the second to last song called the Songs You Used to Write. And kind of like the one that Will picked, it's just sort of about music fandom. And we're all music fans, and we can relate to this. And I looked for the lyrics online because I think I would really like it. But what I was able to pick out on my own, I don't know, it's just a really sweet song. So that's my pick.
Selfish thing. the songs these two write. They changed my life. The songs these two write. They changed my life.
Yeah, it's like, you know, somebody, and it's such a common thing, somebody's writing songs that really affect maybe a small number of people. Probably was the case in the maybe imaginary artist he's talking about. And then you just can't keep going on, you know, and there's just not enough money in it. But the people that love those songs still remember it. And, you know, for one, you know, fleeting moment, you had this glorious thing, and maybe you kind of, you know, move on and forget about it, but there are still people like the singer that remember it, and you changed their lives in small ways, maybe in big ways. So
yeah,
are you sure that's what it's about? Because I thought it was about decolonialization and libertarian socialism.
That's the second verse.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, good.
Chris can write the Pitchfork review for this one. Right.
No, that's the song called Life at Parties.
Yeah. Well, probably the best song title on the album is The Record Player and the Damage Done. You got to love that, right?
Yeah, totally. So, we should have a Neil Young retrospective. You guys Neil Young?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Like Neil Young or old Neil Young?
Well, I have a Neil Young wheelhouse, and that's listening to Rockin' Apple when I was like 18, and that's when Live Rust came out. And so, like, we loved that Live Rust album so much, you know, with the Hey Hey My My and My My Hey Hey, and oh my god.
Oh, that's right. So the first song is My My Hey Hey, the last one is like totally rocked up.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that is super great. It's got like Powderfinger on it and stuff.
Yeah.
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 I love that one too.
It's got like super distorted versions of a bunch of his hits. But just like the guitar sounds like it's going to blow out the amp like for almost the whole thing.
I think I might be thinking of a different. There might, well.
So in night.
Rust Never Sleeps, is that what you mean?
Well, Live Rust was like the live album must have come out right after. Was there an album, Rust Never Sleeps, or was that just a song? I'm not sure.
That was an album from 1979.
Okay. And then they did Live Rust, which had all the hits.
In 1992, at the Marcus Amphitheater in Milwaukee, I went to go see Blind Melon, Soundgarden, who were both opening for Neil Young and Crazy Horse.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
So I loved the first two bands, and then Neil Young and Crazy Horse came on, and I'm like, God, this is just too loud, and so we left.
You were too young, Chris. That's the problem.
You know, on that tour, definitely what his encore would have been. Keep on rocking in the free. That's sure.
That's right about when
it came out like a year before.
Yeah.
2 years. Yeah.
Well, that's when like Pearl Jam was big on Neil Young, and they used to do like they did an MTV awards show together.
And that Mirror Ball album rocking. Too, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, we've done
collaborated.
This is like a little preview of the Neil Young special that we'll do sometime.
I got to look at, there have to be some bad Neil Young reviews. I got to look those up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, some of them well deserved, like Trance.
Well, that's a favorite.
Everybody's rocking.
That's everybody's favorite album to hate is Trans, right? Don't you feel like if you listen to it,
Everybody's Rocking is pretty weird.
I usually try to find the ones that critically are like 5 stars on All Music and they are regarded as classics, and then try to find a bad review from that.
Yeah, that's right.
Digging up old reviews though, I found a news article from 1964 where the Ed Sullivan Show was going to have this new folk singer on to do this song mocking the John Birch Society. And at the last minute, the censors said, no, you can't make fun of the John Birch Society, even though they were complete nut jobs. and it was an original song that was just... And so the national TV debut of Bob Dylan was cut short because he was going to do a song making fun of the John Birch Society.
Wow.
God, they had a low standard for controversy back then, didn't
they? Yeah. If you can't make fun of the John Birch Society, like, who literally can? Like, this was that pre-Smothers Brothers where they made fun of everybody on,
yeah,
on their show?
Totally.
The Smothers Brothers. Now you've really dated yourself. Who under age 50 has heard of the Smothers Brothers?
I'll tell you what.
Well, I'm under the age of 50, and I've heard of the Smothers Brothers.
Not by much.
Borderline, yeah. Saying,
not
yeah.
by much. 3 years, right?
I just turned 48.
48? Wow. Yeah. Okay, yeah. I thought you were kind of young. Yeah.
Close enough.
No.
He's basically 50. Come on.
We're not rounding just yet.
Have you ever seen The Who on the Smothers Brothers?
No.
When they do My Generation?
Sounds like it'd be good.
Yeah, and then, you know, Pete Townes is like smashing up his guitar and stuff.
Yeah.
This was actually probably 60.
Like Phoebe Bridgers.
Right.
Yeah.
He copied her.
Yeah.
For sure. And then, but Keith Moon had put some, you know, I don't know what the right term is, cherry bombs or M80s or whatever, like in his drum set. And right at the end, it goes off. Like, it's way louder than he or anybody else expected. And, yeah, so, like, Pete Townsend's like, that was the beginning for me of the, you know, severe tinnitus. I never fully recovered from that.
So, from the cherry bombs going off in Keith Moon's drum set.
Yeah.
Wow.
Not surprising.
It's totally, total chaos. And it's like, they're so, so great. Anyway.
All right. I think
take that to the bank. The Who, great.
The Who aren't great.
If you've learned anything today, whenever you're listening to this, The Who is great.
This is monumental. All back here in person. It's awesome, right?
Yeah, look at us.
We'll do it again soon, hopefully.
Next time we can talk about the Brewers.
Oh my God,
that's too painful right now.
Sometime later will be a better time to talk about them. You know, I started to reminisce about how, like, the Brewers basically can't hit, right? So they're hitting, I think, .217 as a team. So I was thinking, what would Ted Williams think about the Milwaukee Brewers' inability to hit? He'd be appalled, right? And I look back at some of the stats of some of the old big stars. Like, I looked at the career stats of Ted Williams. He hit .344 with, like, almost 2,000 plate appearances.
That's
no,
insane.
Not 2,000. It's more than that. It's like almost 10,000, I think. Yeah. And then I looked up Ty Cobb, because these are my standards. Brewers need to hit more like Ted Williams and Ty Cobb.
Yeah.
Ty Cobb had a year where he had, you have to look at the stats. Look at Ty Cobb in 1911. Just look that up. It's really fun.
I bet.
Ted Williams missed almost 3 full years because he was flying airplanes.
Flying like fighter jets
in,
or something?
Yeah, in World War II.
Oh my God.
Or in Korea. I forget where he was. But he was off at war. So maybe we should send Christian Yelich off to Afghanistan for 2 years and he'll come back and hit .350.
Right.
Well, he's gonna
that's
be
what
fine.
He needs.
Keston here is the one that needs to be in the military for a little bit of a break. Although, you know what? He is down at Dave's old stomping grounds. Dave, I'm sorry. Did I say Dave?
No, you did,
we don't ever call him Dave.
No, we
David.
Don't. Right.
David's old stomping grounds. Remember when he was
the Timber Rattlers, he was a GM
He was a GM after he did a stint, kind of flamed out as a pitcher. I think he was a pitcher. Yeah. He was bad enough at baseball that nobody was sure what position he played.
Yeah.
But then he became the general manager and whatever. But now Keston here is down there trying to get, to rediscover his swing.
That's important.
Yeah.
You got to discover the swing.
That's like the whole thing.
You got to be a good ball striker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As they say in golf.
Totally.
We had this discussion the other night.
Yeah.
It's like on golf telecasts, they'll say, like, so-and-so, this professional golfer, what he's really good at, he's like a really good ball striker.
Yeah.
Like, how are you a professional golfer if, like, how are you a professional golfer if you, like, every third swing you just miss the ball?
Yeah, right. The swing, swing and a miss in golf is really bad, right?
Yes.
He's a really good ball striker.
Keston Hira is an unbelievable offensive weapon. He's got all the skills.
He's supposed to
be. The only thing he does not do is strike the baseball with the bat.
That's right.
He's got everything else. He's got a good eye. Not good judgment. Kind of silly.
We were talking about this in the context of, like, guys on Tinder who in their profile will say, like, I'm a total catch. I've got this great aura, when in fact he's, like, got no job, been unemployed for 6 years.
Right.
I just have this. I just
the only
have
thing I lack.
It's got an aura. Is,
I have an energy about me that's just amazing.
I just don't have an apartment of my own or any money.
Right.
Or a car. Yeah. But you'd be happy that you'd be welcome to pick me up at my mom's house.
Right.
Take me out on a date.
I have no initiative or work ethic or job or car. But
let's
I just have
fair,
this.
Be fair, I'm a bit ugly. But
I have this energy about me. It's just a really positive. It's my second chakra.
That will
my chakra will dazzle you.
Chakras will shock you. You'll be shocked.
It's really been great having you guys back in the studio.
Yeah, wasting everybody's freaking time.
We'll talk to everybody again next week.
You're like, get the hell out of here.
We're just getting started.
With another edition of Will's Band of the Week. Good night.
Hey, good night.
Good night, everybody.
The Will's Band of the Week podcast is brought to you each week from Fourth Bedroom Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, with correspondents from the United States, Canada, England, and Australia. You can subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or anywhere else podcasts are found. All of our episodes can be found at willsband.net. To contact us, send email to willsband@yahoo.com or find us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. Our theme music was composed by Grant and performed by Grant and Will. Thanks for listening.